It's Monday, August 28th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a great day, a fantastic day to talk ball because the preseason is basically over. Joining me to talk ball, you know, some real upcoming football. It's right around the corner. It's Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Great mood. Yeah, the preseason, which didn't have that much to take from, but we're going to talk about it anyway, just about in the books. Injury here, signing there, big drafts coming. My big drafts have still not happened yet. So this next maybe 10 days is the most important part of the season. It's going to determine how happy your happiness for the rest of the year, really. It comes down to the next 10 days. So this is the critical podcast. Let's not waste any more time. Let's give the people what they want.
Yes, this is cram week here on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. If you've been, you know, out on a beach all summer, very jealous, you've been out on the golf course, you've been getting all the fun in, you've not been paying attention to the NFL since the NFL stopped officially last February, well, that's great. Wonderful for you. This is what cram week's all about. It's the final push to get you ready for the season. I've been having drafts going on all weekend, Scott. I just had a big draft that we'll actually talk about later this week on this very show that just happened literally a couple hours ago. So I'm in full draft mode. I know you are in full draft mode. We all are. So that is what cram week is all about. We start today with the guys that we have changed our mind about, or maybe just rethought a little bit. It can be based on preseason. It can be based on just the way the wind is blowing nowadays. But before we get to that, we do have some news to discuss here, including Scott. I mean, one of the all-time calls by you, as you said, you texted me about it. It was like, I get nothing out of this. I'm like, well, we get to, you know, mess with producer Colin about this and all my other Cowboys fans friends. So I would say that there is a lot to gain out of this particular call. Trey Lance traded to the Cowboys. Like I said, Scott, you just randomly threw this one out there on Friday's podcast. And I was like, I don't really see that happening. And this is where he gets traded to for a fourth round pick. Just a couple of things to note here. There were other teams in on this, the Ravens and Bills, the Lions potentially ran on it as well, but really nobody wanted to jump up to this fourth round price that Dallas did here. So Trey Lance, the era's over with the 49ers. It's kind of a, even Kyle Shanahan said, Scott, like, I feel like I failed Trey Lance. And yeah, it was a failure of a move, but he gets to try to revitalize his career in Dallas.
Right, where he's obviously just a high upside backup to Dak Prescott, not going to threaten Prescott for the job. But you want to have, if you're a contending team, you want to have the idea that you're not sunk completely if your quarterback gets hurt. And maybe we've talked so much about Trey Lance, about how little he's played, but he was drafted third overall after playing one game, basically. And he played four games with the 49ers. One of them was completely a washout because of an injury. He played through a monsoon in Chicago. We have no idea if Trey Lance is good, but we don't know if he's bad. There's certainly an upside here. There are other teams that I respect that were in on Lance. I think he's the type of player every team should have kicked the tires and just see. See if they'd accept something really stupid for him, a really low. I thought when the Jaguars traded Gardner Minshew a few years ago, a different type of player, I thought every team in the NFL should have been like, this is a great backup. Let's get Gardner Minshew a sixth round pick. Sure, I'd love to do that. Philadelphia swooped him. Trey Lance is all upside for the Cowboys, and he's a toolsy guy. He's a guy who hasn't had a chance to play, needed a change of scenery. And also, I think we also have to mention, and we talked about this a little bit last week with Frank Schwab, part of why San Francisco is doing this is they obviously not only believe in Brock Purdy, but I think they believe in Sam Darnold. And I'm not ready to say definitively that Sam Darnold's a lost cause. Third overall pick in his draft class, had some moments with the Jets, had some really bad luck. Who gets mono in this day and age? A lot of injuries, a lot of mismanagement with the Jets when Darnold was there. Then he gets traded to a Carolina team when it was just the wrong time to be a Carolina quarterback. So I don't wish any injury or slump on Brock Purdy, but I actually would be excited if Sam Darnold got some extended playing time this year, because I still think he's got a chance. And what quarterback wouldn't want to be in that SUV that's called the San Francisco offense? We all know how great the skill talent is there. The offensive line actually might be a problem, so we'll see how they massage that during the year. But so this trade's interesting to me. We knew Darnold already had the number two job. That wasn't news, because Lance was going to be number three at best if he stayed in San Francisco. But the bottom line is this. Darnold has a clear path to playing time if something happens to Purdy. Trey Lance has more of a path to playing time now that he's changed teams. So we have interesting players with the runway somewhat cleared for them. That's what we want. We want to be able to see Trey Lance play eventually. He's not going to do it unless Dak gets hurt. I get it. You know, we're a long way away from maybe Trey Lance being an NFL starter, but he needed a change of scenery. He got it. went to one of the goes from one of the glamour NFL teams to maybe the glamour NFL franchise, right? I mean, everybody's got an opinion on the Cowboys, whether it's good or it's bad. So I was excited to see this deal, even though it's not going to mean anything for a while.
Yeah, the everyone's got an opinion on the Cowboys part is why this one's going to be funny, because, I mean, there's just going to be like ridiculous face melting takes, like Dak's first two interception game, you know,
right.
Somebody on a hot take shows me like, is it time to see what Trey Lance has? You know, I mean, Trey Lance might not even be the QB2 on this team right now, because Cooper Rush has played and won games for them as a backup quarterback just last year. So it might be a long, long time before we see Trey Lance at all. But I do think he needed the change of scenery. And also, I think for the 49ers too, I think this is the interesting part of the move, is that, look, they were just like, let's just get Trey that fresh start, like a chance to start elsewhere. And also, I think it gives them a fresh start too, because now if Purdy has that, like, you know, puke on his shoes type of moment, you won't get a segment of 49ers fans or a segment of 49ers media calling for Trey Lance. I don't think anybody will, other than like us football sickos that want to see the weirdness of it, I don't think anybody will truly be calling for Sam Darnold, but there would be some pressure, I think, to see what Lance has. And you could just move forward as a franchise. You know, whether it's right or wrong, I think that's the way the 49ers are looking at it. And Scott, it just clearly says to me they are 110% committed to Brock Purdy as the future of their franchise, which I can support that, I guess, based on how well the offense ran with him last year. I'm not 100% sure that that's going to work out, which they seem 100% sure it is. And here's the deal. Like, they probably will never face any real consequences for what might be one of the worst trade-ups of all time, right? Results-wise with this Trey Lance thing. If Purdy hits, they won't really face any real consequences. But if Purdy kind of stumbles and he isn't the guy, I mean, we could be having a very different conversation about Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch a year from now, where I think right now we're probably all still sort of giving them the benefit of the doubt on this one.
I realize Purdy is mostly a Superflex guy, but how have you been ranking him this preseason, and have you been drafting him at all?
I have in like Superflex formats. I think he's a really nice QB2. I have him right now as a QB17 for me. I think some of his ADP is that's closer to like the low 20s and around QB20, I think still assumes like, oh, yeah, he's not 100%. And maybe he's not 100%. We don't know if he's like fully healthy, I guess. That's worth throwing out there. I thought there was a chance he might miss week one, and that really seemed to not be in the cards for the last like month, basically. So I think he's a really nice QB2 option, someone that's going to have big weeks because of the talent around him and because of how potent this offense is. I do sort of struggle with him versus like Kenny Pickett or Sam Howell, other like QB2 guys that I like, but I think he's right in that bucket for me. What about you?
Yeah, it sounds like we're pretty much in lockstep. And this actually fits the theme of the program, right? Of players you've changed your opinion on. With Purdy, we just needed to see that sign of good faith. Is he healthy? Is the team bought in? Do they feel comfortable that he's the week one guy? We know that now. I have Purdy at QB18, and I think he's a really good, if you get him as a Superflex quarterback 3, you've done really well. I would take him as a quarterback 2 in Superflex if I really like my first guy. I wouldn't maybe want Daniel Jones and Brock Purdy. I'd want to be a little bit better than that. But because the problem is going to be, he's going to have some really high efficiency games. I think it's see Purdy like, okay, 18 for 26 for 245 and 2 touchdowns. You know, it's going to be like 130 quarterback rating, and he's going to be like quarterback 17 that week because he just won't get enough volume from it. But, and we'll see how good the defense is. I don't know if Bosa is ever going to come back to the Niners. There's one holdout I am worried about, but we wanted to see this summer. Is Purdy healthy enough week one? They have a lot of options there. Who are they bought in on? Well, they're obviously bought in on Brock Purdy. This trade tells you that. What they've said all summer tells you that. And every quarterback in the league would love to play with the San Francisco toys.
Speaking of guys you might have, sort of changed your mind about, or like, hey, we got to see a sign of good faith. Josh Jacobs gets a slight pay raise, officially ending his holdout with the Las Vegas Raiders. Jacobs was going to make about $10.1 million under the franchise tag. He now has a chance to earn up to $12 million with the new deal. It's very similar, Scott, to what we saw with the Giants and Saquon Barkley. Let's just get you a little bump. We know it's not really what you want. It's not even really like a meet in the middle, I would say. It's like, we're going to go 20 and you got to come the rest of the way, right? Like, we'll go 20, you go 80. That's kind of how these situations have been with these running backs. But I do think, you know, for me, I just wrote a piece for the website last week saying that I wouldn't take Josh Jacobs or Jonathan Taylor, and Taylor remains a very dubious pick, obviously, with his situation still up in the air. I said in that at the time, I wouldn't have taken this guy, Josh Jacobs, in the second round. Now, I think for me, I think he's an okay, like, late second round pick at this point, just because he's in the building and there's some level of harmony, like some level of harmony there. What do you think? Does this change your opinion about Jacobs at all?
He was running back 8 for me before the news came down. He's still running back 8 to me. He's been a yellow light, almost like a red light, somewhere between yellow and red. There's a lookout below risk with this team. And I know Jacobs beat it last year because I think the Raiders were a good team last year. But when you think of a running back who needs to get there with carries, needs to get there with touchdowns, he's an okay receiver. He's certainly not a plus receiver, but at least they used him a little bit more proactively last year in the passing game. You look at the splits for Jacobs, wins and losses. Most of his touchdowns have come in wins. That's not an uncommon split in the NFL, but I can't look at this Raider team and imagine an 11-6 or a 10-7 season. I just don't think that's even remotely possible unless every single thing fell right for this team. So the Raiders are going to be a team that I'm trying to draft shares of very infrequently. I'm not in on Davante Adams this year. I'm certainly not in on their quarterbacks. They have a couple of tight ends who might cannibalize each other. I would take Jacoby Myers as a boring guy on my bench, but there's really no ceiling there. This is going to be a team I'm going to have almost no fantasy shares of. And to say that means that I'm out on Josh Jacobs because he and Adams are the two players you would think are reasonable second round picks. I'm not going to say you're wrong, dear listener, if you're in on those guys, but I'm trying not to draft Raiders in 2023.
Yeah, the whole point and the conclusion of that Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor piece that I wrote was like, there are reasons to talk yourself out of these guys. If you just don't want any part of like the holdout running back bros, there's reasons to talk yourself out of Jonathan Taylor. I think even more so than Josh Jacobs. That's why I have had Taylor behind Jacobs for quite some time now. With Jacobs, I do think there are reasons to talk yourself out of him. I'm a little bit more closer to yellow light than red light with him. But again, it has to be the bottom of the second round. And usually he's not going to go there, right? Like somebody's going to take him early round too, I think now at this point.
Here's another thing too. This is a really simple point. But your early picks should be picks you're really excited about. You should never be talking yourself into a second round or third round pick. Maybe I guess the third round gets a little bit hairy. You should love your first two players. I mean,
yeah,
who they are, the trajectory of their careers, their supporting cast, their offense, where their team is going to be this year. You should be like, I can't wait to draft this guy. I can't wait to watch this team play. I can't say that about the Raiders. And I realized Jacobs was great last year, and I realized Barron's was all on the Jacobs train and that's basically taking so many victory laps that he's running like halfway across the globe at this point. We love Andy Behrens, who's right now globetrotting to watch international track. That's the lifestyle that Andy Behrens leads. But I would never feel if, you know, I co-manage some teams with Frank Schwab. Maybe he can talk me into Jacobs. He's a smart guy. Obviously, he's a periodic guest on this show and he does a bunch of great work for Yahoo. I would need somebody to talk me into Jacobs, and I'm not going to talk myself into it. You should love your early picks in fantasy. It sounds overly simplistic, but if you're not sure, if you have to talk yourself into a second round pick, he's the wrong guy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, like, simple way to say it. Aaron Rodgers made his preseason debut. Mm-hmm. 3 targets, 30 yards, and a touchdown to Garrett Wilson. Wasn't that just good to see, man? Especially the touchdown. That was beautiful. I just think it's noteworthy. It's the first time we've seen Rodgers. The Jets also, and this was something I brought up with Kendall Valenzuela on the podcast last week about the Jets offensive line. Mekhi Becton has officially been named the starting right tackle. Mm. And it's just good. Like this Rodgers stuff, I know this is so psychoanalyzing and we could get to like week 6 and it could all be gone to hell and none of this matters. But it's great to see Rodgers like hyping up Mekhi Becton, talking about like empowering him and all this stuff. I just think Rodgers is so bought in with this Jets experience right now, like kind of almost regardless of how it ends up going. I think it's a really good thing to see.
Garrett Wilson to the moon. Weep. I weep for every team I leave a draft with that doesn't have Garrett Wilson. How was he targeted? Just one of those right off the snap smoke routes. You know, just give him the ball right away at the line of scrimmage and then the touchdown. Tell me if you've seen this before. Aaron Rodgers throwing an impossible to defend back shoulder throw to a guy wearing number 17 at the left pylon. Does that sound familiar to anybody? You didn't look at that and think this kind of has that Rodgers to Devontae. Like Davante Adams is a Hall of Famer in my mind. So I would not loosely compare anybody to Davante Adams, but Rodgers is going to target Wilson off the bus at the goal line on third down when the chips are down, when they need it. And the rest of this room is a bunch of kind of like threes. I don't know who the two will be. I think Wilson could get like 165 targets. I think he could get not just double digit touchdowns, but like maybe lead the league in receiving touchdowns. That's in the realm of possibility. You take Garrett Wilson anytime in the second round, I'm in. if you think he's a first round pick, you want to take him like 11th, 12th overall. I'm not going to say you're wrong, man. I want to be overboard on Garrett Wilson. I'm so excited. Now, the cold water here, we've talked about this, is their schedule the first 6 weeks could not be any more difficult. The easy games are the Patriots, Belichick in division, and then a trip to Denver, which is never easy. And then they get basically the four primary Super Bowl favorites, it feels like, or four of the top five or top six. Just murderous schedule. But Rodgers, as you said, Rodgers is kind of a mercurial cat, much like the Brady breakup. I've said he needed to leave, needed to be supported, and he's getting. I mean, you can say maybe you'd rather have Chris Olave. You know, obviously Justin Jefferson and Chase are kind of in their own category. But you know, if you looked at who are the five most valuable wide receiver commodities in their career arc and all that stuff and where they're at. I mean, Garrett Wilson's on that list, and Rodgers gets to play with this guy. I can't say enough. Please leave some of your drafts with Garrett Wilson. Unless he gets hurt, you're not going to regret it.
I completely agree with everything you just said. Off the line of scrimmage work, I've said that's the best indicator from his rookie year reception perception is the 81.2% success rate versus press coverage. Anybody who goes over 80% as a rookie, Scott, is basically like, it's a great list. I've read it off of the podcast before, so I won't bore people with it now, but it's like all great players that have done that. So Wilson is in that category of guy. And yeah, that work, that's the stuff that made Davante Adams the special player he was, his route running off the line of scrimmage against press coverage, his release moves. So that seeing Wilson have that in his bag as a rookie and then now getting, you know, Aaron Rodgers there, it's so beautiful. I think really, I agree, he could walk off the bus this year with 150 targets, bare minimum. The only thing that's kind of frustrating, Scott, right now is, again, I've said I've just been doing like three drafts all weekend. I went on this great wine tour with my wife, our last little weekend getaway before the season. I'm in these wineries, like, pause on that tasting real quick. I do have to make one pick in the slow draft. If you get a pick in the top five, which is great. I love getting picks in the top five.
Because I know where you're going.
But you're never getting Wilson on the comeback there. You're never going to get him. And that is kind of frustrating because I'm so with you that if I'm on the turn and I don't really want to take any of those other running backs, right? I mean, maybe a Nick Chubb, I think you can take there. Even if I go receiver there, you know, I want to make sure one of those two picks is Garrett Wilson, right? If it's Steph Diggs and then Garrett Wilson, feel great about that. If it's AJ Brown and Garrett Wilson, like, I want to mix him in one of those picks. But yeah, if you get a top five pick, you're never going to get Garrett Wilson. He's never going to make it back to the late second round, and it's totally justified.
And just to further back up your wide receiver ethos, and look, I know your reception perception, you're always going to be have a receiver 10 because what you do, and the league is a passing league. But I think people who are listening who maybe haven't drafted that much or maybe haven't drafted at all, you're going to be pleasantly surprised that there's always an interesting running back. In fact, maybe the worst time to take a running back is like the third round. But you're going to think, oh, crap, I got to take running backs because I'm going to hate the running backs in the fifth round or the sixth round or the seventh round. I'm here to tell you, you won't. You will find somebody interesting to you. Now, granted, these guys aren't going to have monster ceilings. They're all going to have something, quote unquote, wrong with them, which is why they're available. But you're going to see like 13 of them and like, oh, wow. Yeah, I wouldn't mind him. I wouldn't mind him. I could start him. He could be my running back, too. He could be my flex. And maybe he outkicks his performance and upgrades the running back, too. The running back two flex area for running back is so much deeper than you think it might be, which is why. And I've been saying this all summer. I know Dalton's been saying it. I think it's part of your ethos. You're going to want some of your early picks to be wide receivers, and Garrett Wilson certainly fits squarely in that strategy.
I can't help it. I'm going to read off the success rate versus press.
Please do. I want to hear it,
Scott, because it's so good. So the following receivers have hit 80% success rate versus press coverage in their reception perception rookie seasons. Remember, this dates back to 2014, so that's the only guys I have. CeeDee Lamb, Michael Thomas, Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Odell Beckham, and now Garrett Wilson. So hell of a list to be on, man. I think we really just couldn't stamp this any harder that if this is cram week, the thing we want you to cram into your brain here is to draft Garrett Wilson in the second round this year.
Just not against me. And I love your reception perception goes back to 2014, because as we know, that was the year all the rules of young receivers were broken. Don't take rookie receivers. Well, in 2014, you got Evans, you got Beckham. That was back when Sammy Watkins was coveted. You know, it was such a fun, that's the year really all the rules change. So what a great time to get on board.
Yeah, well, just happened to be lucky on that one. Three little minor-ish news pieces here before we get into the meat of the show. One, the Patriots traded running back Pierre Strong to the Browns for offensive tackle Tyrone Wheatley. Also, bummer news, Ian Rappaport reports that offensive lineman, the Bucs center, Ryan Jensen's knee injury is likely career ending. He's definitely going to miss this year. That's an important position because Ryan Jensen's injury last summer basically started, I think, the snowball for the Bucs offense. Like, that's kind of a sliding doors moment for the Bucs last year that if Jensen's around, maybe they don't have that type of season. So bummer for him. Really good player. And then last one here, the Browns traded Josh Dobbs, famously started a game for the Titans last year off the practice squad, and a 7th round pick to the Cardinals for a 2024 5th round pick. A couple things here. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, their rookie quarterback, is going to be the backup for the Browns. Meanwhile, Josh Dobbs might legitimately start week one for the Arizona Cardinals. That's how up in the air that quarterback room still is. So the Pierre Strong one, Scott, I know that seems kind of random. Like, oh, Pierre Strong, who's that? But, you know, Jerome Ford is the backup running back for the Browns all offseason, but has been dealing with a hamstring injury in the preseason. Not a proven player. So Strong might be a guy to know there as that backup.
For sure. Yeah, they want to have something they feel good about if, God forbid, anything happens to Nick Chubb. And I see the Cardinals, right? Trading Isaiah Simmons for almost nothing.
Yep.
Man, this team.
Josh Jones, below. Too. They traded him to the Texans.
For sure. Yep. Jones goes to Texans. And I always say NFL seasons age like dog years. In 2021, the Cardinals were the last team to lose. I think they got off to a 7-0 start that year and were considered one of the Super Bowl favorites. Kyler Murray, MVP candidate. Seemed like everything was working out with Cliff Kingsbury, who somehow posted a losing record the final year of Patrick Mahomes' career in college. I don't know how you do that. I do know how they had no defense because they scored like 43 points a game and still had a losing record. Imagine that. That's how crazy college is. But this Cardinals team has look out below written all over it. And of course, Caleb Williams is the prize. It's a really rich draft. It's a good draft. Even if they don't want Caleb Williams, if they decide if for whatever reason they're back in love with Kyler, but it's a new organization, I think Arizona, friends of mine have been pounding the under on Arizona, even though the win total, it was like 4.5, which is absurdly low. NFL, just weird upsets happen every once in a while. It's really hard to only win a handful of games. I'm not going to say I'm going to punch that, but I could only take the under on this team because I think they want to be bad. I think they view this season as a total write-off, and I'm going to stream against them defensively, and I'm not going to draft. James Conner, at some point, he becomes a really boring, nobody else wants him, so I'll take him in the 7th round kind of guy. But I really just want to pretend the Arizona Cardinals don't exist other than when I'm streaming DST.
Yeah, fair enough. I have taken Marquise Brown every now and again as like a 4th receiver because he falls so far, and I think he's just too good of a player to quite go that late. But hey, man, it doesn't exactly make you feel good. It doesn't exactly make you feel good. Like, oh yeah, this is a guy I really, really want to take. Right. So I totally agree with you, man. The Cardinals, not an exciting team this year. I think they will be one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in the NFL. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we begin Cram Week here on the podcast. All right. Last week of August. That means your biggest fantasy drafts are fast approaching. So this week is Cram Week. Everything you need to know to be completely ready for the 2023 NFL season. It's kind of like getting ready for your final exams, right? We're tempted to cram all the most important information that you need to know into just 1 week. Oh my God, what a challenge. So for today's podcast, Scott, we're essentially putting a bow on all the preseason action in August and kind of determining what players, we might have changed our minds on after seeing glimpses of what roles and opportunities they could have on their individual teams this year. I also know for you, you talked like, hey, preseason, we don't get to see, we get to see Kenny Pickett, our guy Kenny Pickett, absolutely tearing up the preseason. Hopefully that matters. But as you've said, sometimes we don't know what matters from preseason. So this is just a chance to sort of talk about guys we might be reevaluating.
Sure. Yeah. Or what you missed because you've been at the beach, you've been on the golf course, you've been at the amusement park, at Little League practice, whatever it is. And I think the first thing I have to start with, and again, if you're in tune with this stuff, you're probably with us, but some of you may be out having lives, and I salute that. The Jets have totally changed their view of the backfield, right? Brees Hall. We like you, Brees Hall, but we just gave starter money to Dalvin Cook. They almost doubled the offer, I think, that Miami made for Cook. This just screams out Aaron Rodgers wants Dalvin Cook. This screams out Dalvin Cook starting opening day. Dalvin Cook, maybe the 60 to Brees Hall's 40. How healthy is Brees Hall off a major injury? Brees Hall looked special last year. He looked special in college. I'm a Brees Hall fan. But you have to follow the money. When they give this much money to Dalvin Cook, you have to. Now, I had to swap my rankings. I didn't have Dalvin Cook ranked that optimistically. We'll see where he lands. We'll see if he's got a chance to compete for a starting job. When they gave him this contract, I think they're just handing the job to Dalvin Cook. So I took Breece Hall way down. I moved Dalvin Cook way up. I'm not sure necessarily I want to draft these guys, but at least I have to rank them this way. We gave you all the Garrett Wilson love earlier, and you don't need it again. Just please get Garrett Wilson on your team. But if I was going to have one Jets running back right now, it would have to be Dalvin Cook.
Where do you take Dalvin? And like, on what team builds do you find yourself? I know he's not a first or second round pick where we said we want you to be really excited. You don't have to talk yourself into those guys. But what is the team build where you're like, okay, this makes sense for Dalvin Cook?
Maybe a second or third running back, like where your RB2 and RB3 were kind of interchangeable, where it wasn't even clear which one you drafted first. The thing I do like about Cook is I can just talk myself into Aaron Rodgers making him a volume receiver. There are quarterbacks who are really good to their running backs in the passing game and quarterbacks who aren't. And sometimes we're trying to figure that out. Sometimes we're guessing about stuff like that. We know how good Aaron Rodgers was to his running backs in Green Bay. And I just think it's going to, now granted, Hall could be a big factor in this too. And I still think a healthy Breece Hall is the most talented guy here, but I don't think the Jets make this move if they didn't have some concerns about what, and it may be a case of maybe Hall is, maybe come Halloween or come November, Hall has taken this job and run with it. And maybe Cook is like a first half of the year play, which is why he's not a proactive pick for me. He's more of a yellow light pick for me. If Breece Hall were on my roster, I'd want another running back I felt just as good as. I'm sorry, if Dalvin Cook was on my roster, I'd want another running back I liked just about as much as Cook, and I'd certainly want one guy in front of those guys.
I tend to live in the universe, at least I think is going to happen, the scenario that you painted there, where by October, Halloween, like Breece Hall's really rolling here. And your point about Aaron Rodgers and receiving running backs, that is where I think Breece Hall showed special. I mean, showed a lot of special ability last year, but he did truly, I would say, David Johnson level receiving work for Breece Hall as a rookie. Like, he was getting so many air yards on those targets, like unreal amount of downfield targets for a running back. Like, if somebody's going to be that movable chess piece, kind of how Aaron Jones has been at times with Aaron Rodgers, I think it is going to be Breece Hall. And that's what gets me worried about taking Dalvin Cook. And I'm with you more so than ever this year, Scott, that I want to get off to a fast start. I want to win September this year. I know fantasy content is geared so towards now the late part of the season. That's the important part of the season. It's the most important part of the season. It's a very important part, but it's a lot easier to win in the back half if you're coming in with a hot start. And that's sort of where I've been this year. I think Dalvin Cook can be a part of those hot start builds, but I just, every time I've seen Dalvin Cook, you know, in the queue, on the draft board, I've been like, you know what, by November, I might not even want to be playing this guy. And that makes me nervous.
And you talk about the fast start, right? What do you get when you start off 4-1 or 5-0 or something like that? 5-1, you get leverage. Then you get to think, you get the luxury of thinking more long term as the season goes along. You can wait a week on guys. You can have a bye week that looks horrible for you and live with it. You can go to the team that can't wait out an injured player, and maybe you lowball that player in a trade, that type of thing. I want leverage. That means I want to win September. And also, so many of them, nobody wants to admit this, but so many of these juicy matchups people are dreaming of, those teams, whether it be the offense you're banking or the defense you're looking to pick on, are going to look totally different by then. The NFL's so crazy with injuries and roles changing. And, you know, once a quarterback goes down, the entire offense sometimes can just derail. And there'll be, right now, and we see it every year with just playoff teams, right? Every year, like 5 or 6 playoff teams turn over, which is just bizarre. I talked about how the Cardinals basically fell apart in a little over a year. That's not even an uncommon story in the NFL. That's what the NFL is based on. It's a snow globe league. So again, I want you to play fantasy with a microscope, not a telescope. There's a time to look ahead. It's not right now. Right now, I want you to say, how do I bully the league in September? And I want you to be focused on that. And we will figure out, we will give you good advice on the look aheads, how to play the fab game a week ahead of time, how to, the playoff schedule will matter to us, but it's not today.
Totally agree. Another second year running back that I've changed my mind on a little bit here, Scott, James Cook for the Buffalo Bills. You know, and this is a guy that, like, really, when I put my first set of rankings out, you know, way too early, like right after the NFL draft, you know, they make us put our rankings up like, oh yeah, we really know some stuff right now. I was like, James Cook, you know, he's a whatever RB3, probably not that interested. I was very interested in Damian Harris when he signed with the Buffalo Bills. I thought that, like, and I think that it was probably more of an NFL take because I think they need a grinder back to sort of close games out. I think that he might make sense in that role. But, you know, went through projections and I was like, oh, James Cook, you know, from like a target share perspective, from a rush share perspective, he looks pretty good, even if he's not a full feature back. And then in the preseason, you know, James Cook has really shot, like, it's been clear. There's been a clear drumbeat that he is going to be the top back on this depth chart and a pretty decent gap between him and the other guys. We finally got a look at Damian Harris. He made his preseason Bills debut. According to Pro Football Focus, James Cook took the first 9 offensive snaps with the Bills. Damian Harris took over once they hit the red zone. Harris took the next 4 snaps, scored a 2-yard touchdown. Then again, the next drive, Cook took the first 6 snaps and then Harris took 2 after that. So I don't know, that split, while it will be frustrating that he's probably not going to be a guy that can compete to score like 8+ touchdowns or something this year. You know, Damian Harris is going to be a guy that vultures some of those. Josh Allen's going to be a guy that takes some of those. That usage for James Cook has had me pretty much move him up to like clear running back 2 territory.
So if I understand correctly, you certainly prefer him to either the Jet running backs.
No, I still like Breece Hall more.
You're still holding the torch for Breece Hall. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still holding
the torch. You'll wait for it for Breece Hall, which is a reasonable take.
Yeah, and he's a team sensitive build guy for sure. Like, right? Like you said, I want to make sure I've got guys that I feel really good about at the start. You know, I've talked about Jamal Williams as an option because he's probably going to get the great run of the first 3 weeks when Alvin Kamara is out there. You know, maybe Samaje Perine, right? Like, I'm not trying to take Breece Hall and then load up on these like sketchy backfield guys or, you know, someone I don't have a ton of confidence in. You know, just throwing names out there like, oh, the Eagles running backs. I have no idea how that split's going to go. I'm probably not mixing them in with Breece Hall.
I'm glad you mentioned P. Ryan and Williams because I think they're great Mr. September picks because they don't cost a lot. You get the upside of what they do in September and maybe things fall right and they have viable roles deeper into the season than they look like. Let's just try to win right now. In the case of Buffalo's Cook, the key for me is I just want to tell myself a story that maybe Buffalo pulls back a little bit from Josh Allen. And I've had some debates on Twitter with really smart people. And I think it was Benjamin Scott Barrett, who's been on the show before, the great analyst from Fantasy Points. Although I may have this wrong. Or maybe it was Rich Rebar who was saying this, who's also been on the show and terrific fantasy analyst. He does work with Warren Sharp. The idea that Josh Allen is so dynamic as a runner, if Buffalo pulls back from that, they're just doing a favor to their opponents. Now that I think of it, I think this was a Rebar point. And I get that, but I also think that Josh Allen's the one irreplaceable guy on Buffalo. If he gets hurt, the whole thing goes kablooey. So why are you calling planned runs for him when you're ahead 21 points in the second half? I've never understood that. You can't tell me when it's first and goal at the 2, you can't give the ball to Harris or give the ball to Cook and let them score the touchdown rather than get some wear and tear on your quarterback. For me to draft Cook proactively, I'd like to tell myself a story that they're going to pull back from Allen a little bit, which they've talked about. Now, everybody's going to play until they're punched in the mouth, right? They can say they don't want Allen to run as much, and then they get behind in a game, and Josh Allen's competitive instincts take over. What are you going to do? You know, he's an athlete. He's a competitor. You know, he wants to get that first down. He wants to play to the best of his ability, and it's such a hard play to defend the way the NFL is structured and legislated right now. But if I draft Cook, I want to tell myself a story that maybe Allen loses 15 to 20% of his rushing equity. And I don't know if that's even knowable or not, but I need to get there before I can take Cook proactively.
I think the fact that Allen himself has talked about like needing to sort of cut back on himself a little bit, I think that makes me feel better about telling myself that story. I totally agree that it's a balance, right? I feel like the last 2 years it's become a little imbalanced with the Josh Allen rushing, where I think in 2020 was the first year I started feeling like, oh, when they get into big competitive games, like late in games, close games, that's when they unleash Josh Allen as like a design runner. But really last year, especially, it felt too much like one of their first 2 pitches as opposed to something that they dug out at just the right time. So I think there is an understanding from a team level, from a player level, that this does need to be ultra a little bit. And I think even just that little bit is enough for me to get myself excited about James Cook.
Fair enough. I'll pivot. This will be a quick one because we've talked so much about this situation. When the draft season started, I had Terry McLaurin very much separated from Jahan Dotson, and they've gotten closer together and closer together and closer together. Now, unfortunately, we love Terry McLaurin. He has a toe injury. So I have them almost ranked on top of each other, and I've drafted as if Dotson has all season, all summer, I've pretty much drafted as if Dotson had a good chance to maybe be their touchdown catch leader. Remember the last 5 weeks of last season, they were fantasy dead heat. They're basically the same guy. And I'm excited. I think Sam Howell gives him a chance. It's going to be hard to play as poorly as the quarterbacks did here last year. And sometimes Taylor Heinicke would force the ball to McLaurin. You're going to want Jahan Dotson, man. He's been a helium guy for me. And now there's a lot of buzz about him. A lot of people like him. We're certainly not the only people to be in on Dotson. And I know you and I are long carrying members of the McLaurin fan club, but the way I've drafted as if Dotson is going to be the value here. And he's somebody who, if you're reading anything I wrote for a magazine or anything I wrote in the spring, it wouldn't have had the appropriate Dotson maybe affection, but I'm certainly there now.
It's almost unfortunate with the McLaurin injury that Dotson's not going to sneak up on anybody, because a couple of weeks ago, if you wanted to take Dotson in the seventh round, you could do it every single time. I mean, every single time he was there. Now people will fight you for him because they know the Terry McLaurin injury. I think because more people have talked about him, because McLaurin's going to miss. So I think it's become a lot harder to draft him, even for me. Like I've said that he's like my favorite guy in that sort of volatile tier five for me, tier five of wide receivers, the guys that are going to be a little boom bust. I think he will still be a little boom bust. But he's a lot tougher to get now. He's a lot tougher to get. But I think the moral of the story is that if you're able to pull it off, you're not going to regret that one.
Also, I wrote a piece a long time ago this summer, about when is the best time to draft. And of course, the best time to draft is whenever you feel like drafting. You know, you want to draft early, draft early. You want to draft the middle of summer, draft the middle of summer. You want to draft 10 minutes before game one, do that. You want to draft after week one, do that. I'm all for it. Keep doing it. Yahoo's a great place to do it. But one of the things that I like about drafting, quote unquote, early or earlier than these late drafts, and, you know, and people always say, well, your guys are going to get hurt and you're getting frustrated by that. And that's true. Although you can never legislate injuries out of the game. You can never duck injuries. Your guys are constantly going to get hurt. I drafted Jerry Jeudy about 10 minutes before that news came back last week. That was really frustrating. But when you do draft early, if you connected dots on something, if you saw something coming ahead of time, you can get rewarded. You talked about if you were in on Dotson, if you were ahead of the curve on Dotson, if you were ahead of ADP on Dotson, you would have a portfolio right now that would have him all over the place. And you would just, okay, Dotson's going to be here right at this point. I can just tip out, minding my own business, pick him up, stash him on my roster. I got him in one competitive league where he's not even a starter for me. And we start three receivers, I think, in that league. And he's my receiver four. And I'm over the moon about that. Now, and I always say, you know, the less sophisticated player, like if you're a casual player, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, people have different interests in the NFL. Not everybody's a sicko like Matt Harmon. Not everybody's a sicko like me. That's fine. But the people sometimes who are maybe more casual players, they like to draft closer to the season because they want things to be spelled out. They want to know who's the starters, who won this position battle, who's hurt, who isn't hurt, stuff like that. And look, nobody can really forecast injuries. We can just take educated guesses with that. And whenever somebody gets hurt, somebody goes on Twitter and takes a victory lap. Oh, yeah, I knew that guy. That's garbage. Don't be like that. Don't be that guy. But
yeah,
I do like some earlier drafts just because if you can get ahead of the market on some things, on some trends, then you can get rewarded. Now, we'll see how they play out. For all I know, maybe Jahan Dotson has a terrible season. You can say all these takes were wrong. But I thought even before McLaurin got hurt, he had a chance to be the guy you really wanted in this Washington passing game. Let's put a bow on it with this just briefly. What's your impression been of Sam Howell this summer?
I think the team's faith in him continues to be encouraging a little, maybe just like, wow, it's surprising would be the right word. I don't want to say it's strange, but it feels good that they feel, you know, so kind of set on him. I think he's played well in the preseason, right? I get that some of those plays against the Ravens, probably against a first team defense, you know, more live pass rush, he's probably going down for some sacks where he's holding the ball a little too long. But the guy is definitely a playmaker, right? He is not going to be in play in that little box. I think he's got a little bit of Heinicke to him, but he's just way more talented than Taylor Heinicke. Heinicke's got like a, you know, an XFL arm from an arm strength perspective, from an arm talent perspective. Howell's got more juice to him. He certainly pushes the ball downfield. I think that aggressiveness is going to be key for McLaurin when he's healthy and key for Dotson, who people don't realize that Dotson was like a true downfield vertical route runner last year. So I feel pretty good about what we've seen from Sam Howell. And really that I don't think there was ever a moment where it seemed like, oh, Jacoby Brissett is gaining ground on Sam Howell. And Jacoby Brissett's a solid NFL backup. You know, if he's your QB2, I think you're feeling really good about it.
Great backup.
As we saw with Cleveland last year, he can masquerade as a starter. So like Sam Howell beating out Jacoby Brissett is not nothing either.
For sure. And you like to have, not most teams aren't maybe confident in their backup. I think Washington can be. Brissett is, he's that donut tire, right? You can go 100 miles on it. You just don't want to go cross country with it. Also, Howell did show some athleticism and some running ability in college. So we'll see if that translates to the NFL as well.
Okay, here's a very boring guy that I think I've changed my mind on. I came into this year thinking like, yeah, there's going to be no scenarios where I draft Adam Thielen or I think Adam Thielen is like a proactive pick.
Wow. He didn't even make my all boring team. Adam Thielen has aged out of boring. He's just old now.
I totally get it. But the Panthers receiver room already wasn't good. And it's gotten really banged up at this point. You know, DJ Chark, who I think is like a, you know, he's a whatever vertical X receiver, not a separator, but a vertical ball winner. Terrace Marshall's been banged up. Laviska Shenault was dealing with a concussion. Damir Bird, who's back with the second time for this team, was put on IR. You know, Jonathan Mingo has been running out as their clear cut starting flanker receiver. But Adam Thielen has been like in a power slot role. And Bryce Young has thrown 34 preseason passes. 12 of those have gone to Adam Thielen. Mm-hmm. 6 have been to Mingo. 3 have been to Chark. He's mixed in Hayden Hurst a little bit there. But, I mean, Thielen has, again, just been dominating targets on this offense. And I think, Scott, when we talk about, like, receivers and the aging curve, I do think it matters a lot, like, what is the role that they're going to project into. And I think seeing Thielen as this, like, power slot player, I mean, I'll get in the Allen Robinson mention too, that he's kind of this guy in Pittsburgh, but it has no path to targets like Adam Thielen does. You know, you look at a lot of like Thielen's advanced metrics last year and they don't look good, right? From a targets per route run or yards per route run standpoint, but he's playing outside. He's playing as a pure outside receiver in Minnesota. And this slot role he's actually done before. Like, remember when Stephon Diggs at first was a slot receiver and then they moved him outside and then they put Adam Thielen in the slot. This is a role he's played before. So I don't know. Like, I don't think Adam Thielen is washed. He might be just like kind of cooked as a perimeter receiver, but in this slot receiver role, you know, and he goes so late. Again, nobody wants to draft freaking Adam Thielen, but if he goes around like receiver 50 in drafts, and I have, if I need like bankable target projection there, and I'm not looking necessarily as like a, like, again, if I've got a weak receiver room up top, like a draft isn't this weekend. I didn't love my first three receiver picks because I prioritized other positions in a super flex format. I was like, you know what? If Adam Thielen is my fourth receiver, and I think he's probably going to get 120 looks this year in a role that I think is better suited for him, I've been drafting more of Adam Thielen here, and I did not expect to say that at this point.
Well, I'll tell you what I didn't expect. When you introduced Thielen's name, I thought, okay, there's no way Matt's going to sway me on this. And I think in the last 2 minutes you did. What are we looking for in preseason, right? The more solidified a team is, the more continuity they have, the less we really care what they do. And a lot of teams didn't even play their starters in the preseason. Jared Goff, I don't think, took a snap. There was like 8 or 9 guys per Warren Sharp that didn't use their number one quarterback in the preseason. I may have that number wrong, but it's in that neighborhood. But obviously in Carolina, everything's new. New coaching staff, new franchise quarterback, just about an entirely new wide receiver room. And the fact that Thielen drew that many targets from Young, that's actionable event. That makes Thielen an interesting guy to be on the bench. And he's not being pushed by the most talented guys behind him. I also was encouraged. We don't think of Thielen really maybe being a big downfield guy now, but Young was not afraid to stand in the pocket and push the ball downfield, which makes me more interested in Young long-term. I like the fact that he had that poise and was willing to take hits and stuff. But if nothing else, we have to project Adam Thielen to be the target leader and the touchdown catch leader here. And that's not insignificant for a team that may have to push, you know, chase the game in the second half. I know obviously that division's really weak. You can talk yourself to almost anybody of the four teams, but I give you credit, man. I was totally out on Adam Thielen about 3 minutes ago, and I think I'll be moving him up my ranks. You know, look, he's a priority bench guy, right? You do not want to leave your draft starting Adam Thielen. Nobody's saying that, but he's going to be one of the, maybe, you know, maybe I can shoe him onto the all boring team for one last ride before the 23 season kicks off.
I mean, hey, look, he's a guy who might get you through bye weeks, right? Mm-hmm. By the time we're, you know, and Jonathan Mingo is a rookie that I really, really like, but I have always said he is going to be a second half of the year player for the most part with this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all Halloween guys. They're all the slow developing Polaroids. So you know, the thing you do with guys like Mingo, you look to swoop in when somebody drafts him, doesn't play him, and then has to cut him because they have injury problems or they have bye week problems. That's when you try to get in the second half of those guys. But you got me on Thielen. I like that. For my next secret list player, because we are doing secret lists here, I have a rule of thumb. I think I mentioned it on the last podcast we did with Frank, that how do we decipher the mumbo jumbo sound bites of the summer? And I say, well, when they say something nice, be skeptical. When they say something not nice, believe it. And everything I hear about the Cleveland Browns this summer is that Deshaun Watson's struggling. And, you know, why would they tell us that, right? If they said everything was great, it was wonderful, I would take it with a grain of salt. When they tell him that he looks rusty, it makes me nervous. Even though I think Nick Chubb's going to lead the league in rushing, I still think this might be the fourth best team in this division. They have interesting pieces, right? We like Amari Cooper. I know you're a big Elijah Moore guy. I've always liked David Njoku, but you need the quarterback to play well. And I was willing to give Watson a pass last year. I think he got helicoptered into a situation that was impossible playing late in the year. So I really took nothing at face value from how he played last year, but I just wanted a reason to believe in his on-field potential this year. And I've seen none of it this summer. He's gone from somebody who I was okay to draft. And I realize it's off the field stuff. And you have to decide how you feel about that. I feel like we're going to be acknowledging that until the end of time, but there it is. I was willing to draft Watson in different roster builds this summer, and I really pulled back from that ranking. He's moved down like five or six slots. Maybe I'm crazy. You can talk me out of it. But again, when a team says stuff that's negative, I'm more inclined to believe that's the truth.
I considered Watson for my list as well. And it's funny because I'm still pretty bullish on all of the other players. I wouldn't say I'm bullish on Amari Cooper, but I'm kind of fine where he goes. If he's my second receiver, I generally am okay with it. I still really like Elijah Moore when you get to the receiver 40 range. So I like to sprinkle him in. Obviously Nick Chubb, I'm not Andy Barron's all in on Nick Chubb, but I'm pretty all in on Nick Chubb. But Deshaun Watson, and I've said this a lot, just again, when you look at consensus ADP, there's a gap between like the Justin Fields, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence group. Then there's, you know, Tua and Dak and Kirk and all these like late round guys that I really like. And Watson is sort of, he's in his own little grouping there. And I think if anything, I just think he belongs closer to those guys that go in the 80s and 90s, where he goes in the consensus ADP 70s. So I just don't know that he's a guy like him specifically. I think he can struggle, not get to his prior form, be better. I think he'll, like, the one thing I feel strongly about Scott is that he will not be as bad as he was last year.
Can't be.
But he really just can't be. But I think there's a lot of room between not where he was last year and being a guy that I want as my starting fantasy. Like, again, a 75 overall ADP kind of suggests like he's your every week starter. You're not really messing around with, oh yeah, I'll take Jared Goff late and maybe flip flop him around. But so for me, I think he just belongs in that next group down.
Are you still pounding the table for Elijah Moore?
Pounding the table for him as a player from a fantasy perspective. I mean, yeah, where I have him ranked, he's a green light for me. Again, just because I think he's so good, and I think they're going to be really intentional about the ways they get him the ball. And even, by the way, like it seems like the ways they're getting him the ball, Watson can be bad, and those plays can still be really effective, those schemed up design touches that they're getting him.
Right, and it may be a case of, because, you know, Moore can be electric after the catch. It can be, you remember the Justin Fields preseason game a couple of weeks ago, right? He just threw a couple of short passes and the guys housed him. You know, maybe the Cleveland infrastructure will be so good that it won't even matter. I also wonder, what are we going to be saying about Kevin Stefanski a few years from now? We talked last week about how coach of the year a lot of times is just what team surprised us. You know, nobody, Matt Nagy is, you know, back with the Chiefs now. He may never be another head coach again, but
I don't know, man. I think people are going to be pissed when Matt Nagy gets another head coaching job before Eric.
Maybe I'm wrong on that. Where do you think the Kevin Stefanski story is headed?
I'll tell you what, if he is, he being Deshaun Watson, if he is, you know, meh, and this team, like we just talked about with Frank on the last podcast we were all together, this team does not meet expectations. They're fourth in the division. We're going to be talking about not head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Kevin Stefanski, this time next year. He's not going to be the head coach of that team. They have a lot of internal expectations about what this roster is and what they should be. I mean, you don't make that trade for Watson without having those expectations.
For sure.
So if the guy who will be the fall guy here, it'll be Kevin Stefanski first. I think Kevin Stefanski is a really good offensive coach, but I think that he will be the fall guy if this doesn't work out with Watson.
Yeah, producer Colin and I were talking about that earlier, about sometimes the greatest things you can do for a hire is hire a failed head coach as a coordinator. I think Josh McDaniels is a hell of a OC. Wade Phillips was a great defensive coordinator, maybe over his head sometimes as a head coach. Norv Turner was one of those guys. I think Kevin Stefanski, the moment, if it doesn't work out in Cleveland, and look, you know, he's a person, he's somebody's job. I don't wish bad things on Kevin Stefanski, but he's one of those guys that if Cleveland did let him go, I think there's probably like 15 teams that would love to give him the play sheet.
All right. I talked about a boring receiver with my last one. I'll go rookie receiver here for a guy that I've changed my mind on. Quentin Johnson with the LA Chargers. He was a guy that I thought I was going to be ranking pretty aggressively and like, oh, I really like him as someone that I think could get off to a hot start. I'm a little skeptical that he is going to end up being a guy that people draft and he doesn't play a bunch right away. They have sneakily treated Josh Palmer like a starter all offseason. Josh Palmer is, I don't think Josh Palmer is a great player. I think he's like a depth receiver. I think when he has been stretched out of his role the last couple of years with injuries on that roster, especially last year, because he's not a separator and he's just not explosive, he has been a big part of the offensive problem with LA last year, Josh Palmer being the receiver. But he's a guy who has shown he could play in the NFL. Again, he has not played at all in the preseason, just like the actual starters on this team. He's been running as kind of the top guy for the third receiver job out of the LA Chargers training camp. And look, again, Quentin Johnson can just get in here in the first couple games, make some big plays, and like, we're not talking about Josh Palmer. And I'm certainly not telling you to draft Josh Palmer in fantasy, right? But I think Palmer could be just good enough to keep Johnson off the field like the first 4 weeks of the season, especially because Johnson is a guy they've played. He's played a ton in the preseason because he needs reps. We had this conversation with Austin on the podcast last week, like with Quentin Johnson as a guy who needs live NFL reps to get ready to play real live NFL receiver. So I think he could end up being like, he's drafted right now as if he is going to be like a day one factor, not a long-term developmental receiver. Colin pointed out in the chat that, you know, Eckler and I had a long conversation about, he's still got to learn how to beat zone coverage. And the league is primarily a zone coverage based situation right now. Wide receiver 45 for Quentin Johnson. Again, his ADP has fallen a little bit, but he doesn't go in the same range as some of these other rookie receivers, you know, like the Mingos or the Jaden Reeds or some of those guys. And even though he was a first round pick, I think he could end up being like someone that people draft. He's not really playable. He gets dropped during bye week hell, and then you pick him up and you love having him in the second half of the year. And yeah, I did not think he was going to be that type of guy.
He fits that mold, right? The slow developing Polaroid picture that you want halfway through the fantasy season. And that's how I'm going to address it. We're right now, as we speak, we're working on a piece of players that were fading. And I was considering having Keenan Allen on that fade list. And I ultimately decided not to use him. I'm going to use a different receiver. And I think you picked up on Keenan Allen. So I'm curious, and again, a lot of times you and I come from fantasy and evaluation from different perspectives, and I have huge respect for all the work you do with RP. What's the fade of Allen based on?
Well, and I think I replied to you that I hate that I'm fading Keenan Allen, but he has been a guy that where he goes, it's never going to work for me. Wide receiver 19, 41st overall player. I know what the box score says with Keenan Allen, right? When he got back from injury he didn't lose, you know, he didn't lose anything. He was still super productive. Well, as I always say with these guys, like the offense was underproducing expectations last year, even when they kind of figured it out towards the back half of the year, that offense was still a problem. So that doesn't impress me, right? That like he was getting those type of target totals when the offense was, we were all complaining about the offense. They fired their offensive coordinator. The biggest thing with Keenan Allen is that I think he is officially in decline. I've mentioned this before, but from 2015 to 2020, Keenan Allen was consistently, Scott, between 77.6% and 76.6% success rate versus man coverage in reception perception. Like locked in, great numbers, super consistent. We saw a slight drop in 2021 that I was like, okay, big deal. But then he dropped down to 66.9%, which isn't terrible, but it's like league average, right? I think he's trending in the wrong direction as a player. And what makes no sense to me is that we all think that, oh, this offense is going to push the ball downfield more. Justin Herbert's going to be throwing the ball downfield because he's so good, and that's what's going to happen. But then Keenan Allen's still going to get this dominant target share to be a clear-cut number two receiver in fantasy when he's not really a touchdown scorer. That doesn't square to me. So I just think that if he's going to get the type of target totals that he needs from where he gets targeted for him to be as valuable to go off the board 41st overall, like then the Chargers offense, I don't think it's going to be very good. And I hate saying that about a slot guy.
All reasonable. Really curious to see what Kellen Moore does with this offense. I know we're running a little bit low on time, so I'll just give you what's left on my sheet super quick.
Cool.
I wanted to see if Sean Payton could fix Russell Wilson, and maybe he will, but they wanted KJ Hamler. He's hurt. His career is probably over. They want Tim Patrick. He's hurt. Now Jerry Jeudy, who you and I have disagreed with all summer, he's hurt. Wilson did not play well in the preseason. Even Greg Dulcich, who we like, is having trouble getting on the field. So I'm really nervous about that passing game. Travis Etienne makes me nervous. I don't know how much goal line equity he'll have. I don't think he's maybe as used in the passing game as we'd like him to be. And Doug Peterson, a lot of times, is a two or three back. Two backs is kind of the NFL standard anyway, but I could see them maybe even finding a way to use three backs. I'm nervous about that. Tajay Spears, I think, looks really good in Tennessee. And I hate to say backups.
Yeah.
I hate to say the insurance running backs make a lot of sense, but if you draft Derrick Henry, I think you got to have your eye on Spears. And for a couple of different reasons, it's not really worth going into. I was going to fade TJ Hawkinson earlier in the year. I just kind of reimagined that offense and reevaluated it. And I moved him back into somebody. He's gone from somebody who I can feel good about drafting. So there's a few of the guys I had on my list.
I like all of those. Spears was someone that I was going to discuss too, because Derrick Henry is a guy who I'm, based on my rankings, I'm drafting, and I do get a lot of Derrick Henry because he tends to fall into a nice range, especially if I have a top five overall pick and I go with the receiver and then I come back in round two and people have just let Derrick Henry stay there. Sure. Like, I'm taking him every single time. But Spears, I think, has at least made himself interesting enough this summer that I wonder if the Titans say, hey, you know what? We're a run-based team. Let's lessen the load on Derrick Henry a little bit. Like, we just mix, like, you sprinkle in Spears for 10 touches or something like that, 10, 11 touches. I know that doesn't sound like much, but who in Tennessee has been getting mixed in for 10, 11 touches the last few years with Derrick Henry? So I'm glad you brought him up.
Also, I'm just rehashing what we said all summer. I feel like I move my Pittsburgh guys up every day. I need somebody to cool me down from the Steelers. It's maybe not going to be you, but what's left on the Harmon sheet?
I mean, my God, dude, Kenny Pickett, he's looked so good in the preseason. We were already ready to be over our skis with this offense, and then the offense has looked that good in the preseason. It's just like, I mean, my God. Anyways. The Pittsburgh guy I had on my list was Jalen Warren. Mm-hmm. I went into this saying, like, look, I think Jalen Warren's is going to be a bit player. He's not going to really threaten Najee Harris. Now I'm not so sure. You know, I know Matt Canada said, like, Najee's our RB1 and we're really committed to it. But actions speak louder than words. And in the preseason so far, like, Jalen Warren's been on 43% of the snaps with the starters. He's been the clear third down back. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes sense with... If you and I are right about the Pittsburgh passing offense taking another step, like, having Jalen Warren as that third down passing down space back, you know, maybe the 2-minute drill, it's not a super valuable role in fantasy, but I think it makes sense for the offense. And it makes Warren, like, not a running back insurance guy. It makes him somebody that if you were like, need a what the heck flex, like, okay, I'll throw Jalen Warren out there and maybe he catches six balls and scores a touchdown in this game. So he's somebody I have on my list. Gabe Davis is also on my list. You know, I'm not the biggest Gabe Davis. I was like out on him last year, but I think his role is so well protected in this offense. And he's a guy I've actually been like willing to draft as my receiver 3, like a boom bust type guy, you know, in that same bucket as like a Jahan Dotson or George Pickens. Yeah. So he's someone that was on my list. And you mentioned Khalil Herbert, somebody I've moved up a little bit based on his preseason usage, although this is maybe a topic we can have on another topic for another time. But I'm a little kind of like curious about the Bears offense and how good it's going to be. But yeah, those are guys on my list, especially the Jalen Warren one I've definitely moved up.
Right. And just to piggyback your Warren talk, if we see him having some kind of standalone role, it really hurts Najee Harris, because anybody who drafted Harris, the major prong to his argument is going to be volume, 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 backfield to himself. And maybe that's not the case.
Yeah. Nope. He is somebody that I've moved like Damian Pierce ahead of Najee Harris. Just like based on this concern, there's nobody that, I mean, Devin Singletary is not doing that. He's not forcing, his way on the field like Jalen Warren is forcing his way on the field. But all right, that's going to do it. Scott, good episode. We can officially put the preseason to bed now.
Yeah, get the pillows out. Let's take a nap and come out ready to draft. You know, come out hot. And you know what else? I'm glad we talked a lot of Chargers here because you have the Austin Eckler's ear. I always figure that you're going to be more right about the Chargers than like any other team because you're getting the inside info. So we could talk Chargers every episode. Hey, Austin's been good to us, man. He's told us, like, hey, if I'm not playing, you want this running back, you know?
100%. I am very glad about that as well. Again, great episode here. We love it. A couple things for you people out there, the listeners, before you go. There are only 11 days left to sign up until the fantasy season, so make sure you get your league started or join a public league at yahoofantasyfootball.com. Also, there has never been a better or more overwhelming time to be a sports fan. Kendall Baker has you covered with the Yahoo Sports AM, our new daily newsletter that we promise will quiet the noise and deliver everything you need as a sports fan to start your day in a simple, digestible format. That starts today, August 28th. So sign up at yahoosports.com/sign up. Speaking of Austin Eckler, I'm going to be back with Eckler's Edge tomorrow, and I can officially announce that this year there is an Eckler's Edge Fantasy League with some of the biggest names in the industry. Austin and I literally just did this draft like 3 hours ago, so I have a lot of fun stories to talk off of that. One of the two people that host Eckler's Edge was able to draft Austin Eckler in the league, but it might not be the one that you're thinking. The draft is really great. We're going to recap that on our episode. Until then, we're out.